The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
What is the title pastor? What does it mean? What does the Bible teach about the title or the office or the gift? And does physical illness in a believer come from disobedience by that believer? Let's talk about these things today here on Grace in Focus. We are delighted that you're joining us, friend. And this is the radio broadcast and podcast ministry of the Grace Evangelical Society. Oh, and by the way, Happy New Year to you. Grace in Focus is looking forward to it, and you can go to our website and find out more about us at faithalone.org. We're especially looking forward to our 2025 National Conference, which will be held in May 17th through 22nd. We'd love for you to get registered and plan to be with us at Camp Copus. Find out more about this at our website, faithalone.org. Now with today's question and answer discussion, here are Bob Wilkin and Mike Lee.
All right, Bob, today we have some questions from our YouTube audience.
And, oh, good.
And it looks like, I think it's somewhere in one of your videos or podcasts, you said, you don't want to be called pastor. This person's asking, if you don't want to be called pastor, why or why not?
Well, I'm not currently what you would call a pastor. I do speak once a month at Vista Ridge Bible Fellowship. I guess you could say I am a pastor at Vista Ridge Bible Fellowship, but the New Testament doesn't have an office called pastor. There's no verse that says this is what a pastor is or this is what a pastor does. Pastor is a spiritual gift in the New Testament, pastor, teacher, and the office in the New Testament is elder, or it's also called overseer or bishop. Those three words are interrelated, and there were multiple in every church. So there's not a pastor, there's multiple pastors, and those pastors are elders who are doing pastoral work. The word pastor, poimen, is basically the idea of a shepherd, someone who shepherds a flock. And so a pastor is someone who is shepherding a flock, one of the elders. Well, at our church, I'm not an elder, but I am someone who preaches to the flock once a month and every week in a Sunday school class. So it's kind of an odd mix. But in a brethren model, Plymouth Brethren model, you don't really call anybody pastor.
Brother Bob.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems to me that's a better approach. I mean, I know a lot of Bible church pastors who don't want to be, and they're the senior pastor with a staff, and they don't want to be called pastor.
Our friend Bob Bryan is very adamant about that.
Isn't he?
Yeah, I remember Letitia said, oh, Pastor Bob means that don't call me Pastor Bob. And I think precisely for the same reasons you've just cited, it's a gift. I guess we don't go around calling people, this is Giver Joe, and this is Encourager Steve, right?
Yeah, and teacher, you know, the people who have the gift of teaching, we typically don't call them teacher. Sure. Now, of course, Jesus was called teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He was also called rabbi, that kind of thing. But as far as the church age is concerned, we're not identifying certain people as being the head of a local church, not an individual. It's multiple people that are to be leading the local church, and they're called elders. So that would be my answer to that YouTube question.
Okay, so I guess pastor, that's kind of a man-made. I mean, it's not wrong to call someone that, but you can't say that the Bible prescribes that's what we're supposed to address people as.
Exactly. Now, if I was going to a church where everybody called the person who did the preaching on Sunday morning pastor, if I was in that church, I would call him pastor. It's just a sign of respect.
Right.
But I would know in my own head that he's one of many people in this church that are leading the church. And if I would probably not be in a church today if you had a situation where one man was running the whole show.
Yeah.
Maybe, but I even if the person was clear on the free gift of eternal life and they taught the Bible verse by verse, I'd be a little reluctant to be in a church where one man was in total control of the church. You know, it reminds me of Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them. And this was multiple elders, but this person basically was a dictator among the elders.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be reluctant to be in that. I might, if the person was clear on everything else and was a solid Bible teacher. but it's a dangerous position to be in.
Yeah, because the New Testament prescribes that the church is governed by a group of elders,
right.
not one elder supreme above all.
Right. And when I was at Dallas Seminary, I think I've mentioned this before, we were basically taught that if we went out as a pastor, we might or might not be on the elder board. And if we were on the elder board, we were a servant of the elder board. Well, later on, by, I don't know, let's say the year 2000, the basic prevailing view in evangelicalism and at Dallas Seminary was, if you're a pastor, you are one of the elders, and you're an equal, and you're kind of all equal, and you're all pulling together. Well, now, another 25 years later, we're basically in the position where at most seminaries and Bible colleges, the position is the elder board is the servant of the pastor.
Interesting.
And so the pastor is the CEO of the church, the senior pastor, you know, if it's a big church, which is what you're all aiming for, right? Yeah. Everybody wants to have the mega church or the they want to break the 400 barrier or break the 1,000 barrier.
Yeah.
And the pastor is the CEO and the elders are his servants.
Yeah. It's interesting. Actually, that model isn't really what the business world even has. I mean, in the business world, a board of directors, the CEO serves at the what you've actually described sounds more like a dictatorship where, you know, the dictator appoints his cabinet or whatever, but they serve at his leisure.
It's kind of a set. And like here within GES, we function more like you're saying in the business world.
Yeah.
I report to the board and I am a servant of the board and the board could fire me.
Yeah.
The board can demote me and the board can do lots of things. I serve at their pleasure.
Yeah.
And if they ever decide that I'm not right for the position, well, I don't control them. They control me.
Yeah.
I'm one of the members of the board, but...
But you have...
I just get one vote. But we do follow the basic pattern.
Pattern, right.
In other words, multiple people on the board, and that they all have a significant vote, and they all need to be people who are apt to teach. You know, we want people on the board that can defend the free grace position.
Just jumping in here to make you aware of our magazine, Grace in Focus. It is a bi-monthly, 6 issues per year, 48-page magazine, full color. And we want you to subscribe by emailing your name and your snail mail address to ges@faithalone.org. The subscription is free. It can be accessed electronically or it can be actually physically sent to you if you live in the lower 48 United States. That's our Grace in Focus magazine. Send your name and snail mail address to ges@faithalone.org.
Well, let's see. I think you've got another question from another YouTuber.
Yeah, and this is from CV. And she writes, "Hi, I'm new to this stuff, so please bear with me. So are you saying that if a believer gets ill, it's because they've done something wrong or only sometimes? Because that doesn't seem right. Lots of impressive Christians throughout time have had illnesses and afflictions. Just checking. Thanks again for the great videos."
Yeah, does illness prove you're disobedient or something like that? You're out of fellowship with God?
Anytime someone's sick, is that proof that they've done something wrong or only sometimes?
I hear this question a fair amount, and it's not coming from what I write and what I teach. It's coming from evidently what other people write and teach, because when I speak on this and when I write about this, I'm clear that the situation is if someone rebels against God and they go to the spiritual far country, they're going to reap the consequences like the prodigal son did. They're going to find famine. They're going to find want. They're going to find that they're experiencing God's discipline and his judgment in this life. I don't say, and by the way, anytime you have an illness or anytime you have an injury or anytime you have a financial setback or anytime you have a problem in your life, it's because you're in rebellion against God. I don't say that. I don't write that. And often I say quite specifically that we get lots of problems and calamities that are simply part of God's sovereign will for us, but we need to recognize when we go through a difficulty that it could be God's discipline.
Yeah.
I remember shortly after I graduated from Dallas Seminary, someone I had known, a fellow graduate from my class, came down with cancer. And while he was in the hospital, he did a moral inventory and even prayed and said, "Lord, could this be because of some rebellion in my life that I'm suppressing? And he came to the conclusion, no. And so he went forward. And I would agree with CV that most of the illnesses we have in life are simply part of the human experience. God allows those illnesses,
yeah.
But it's not like God is giving us this illness because we're in rebellion.
Yeah.
The other extreme would be wrong, to say God never causes a believer to have an illness. He never causes a believer to have financial setbacks. He never causes a believer to have difficulties in his or her life. That would be wrong, too, because we have lots of examples. In 1 Corinthians 11:30, the Corinthians were getting drunk at the Lord's Supper, and he says, because of this, some of you are sick and some sleep, referring to death.
Right.
Some of them were sick because they got drunk at the Lord's Supper. It doesn't mean every time you get sick, it's because you were drunk at the Lord's Supper.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get drunk at the Lord's Supper,
yeah.
You might not be surprised if you get sick,
yeah.
Or if you die prematurely. And you've got lots of examples of that in the Old Testament. Nadab and Abihu offered up strange fire in Leviticus 10, and God struck them dead, or Ananias and Sapphira in Acts 5,
yeah.
And it says fear fell on the whole church. So we need to recognize God does bring about consequences.
And we can even see that in just human experience. Well, if you are, let's say, sexually promiscuous and you come down with a sexually transmitted disease, well, that was a result of that type of sinful behavior.
And of course, some people would say, well, that's not God's judgment.
Yeah.
That's simply the natural consequence of sexual immorality. Either way,
right. You're
getting that illness because of your sin.
Yeah.
Either way, and I would say, since God is sovereign, everything that comes into our life is something he allows, because there are people who are involved in sexual immorality who don't get STDs.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to say God, in some sense, is sovereignly determining who gets what or who he allows to get things. But we need to avoid the other extreme. CV is paranoia. And every time I get the sniffles, it's, you know,
yeah.
Because of some judgment. I get sick a lot. And I just view it as, okay, it's part of the human experience.
Right. We shouldn't be going around looking at our lives like every bad thing that ever happens to us, it must be because I did something wrong, I did something sinful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need to have balance. And the balance position is God judges believers when they're out of fellowship with him. But much of this illnesses and difficulties we experience in life are simply because God is allowing us to go through a time of testing.
To hopefully help faith grow in him.
Absolutely.
All right. Those are great questions today from our YouTube audience. And remember,
keep grace in focus.
We invite you to check out our Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 5-minute YouTube videos at YouTube Grace Evangelical Society. You will love the content and learn a lot. Maybe you've got a question or comment or feedback. If so, please send us a message. Here's our email address. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Please make sure your question is as succinct and clear as possible. That would be a great big help. On our next episode, turning away from Christ, does that mean losing everlasting life? Please join us. Until then, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.